Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
As you know, it's that time of the day. It's that time of the day on a Wednesday when Ntabiseng Ntubazana graces our presence with her brilliant mind and knowledge as we look into all things legal. Ntabiseng, thanks again for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Always so good to be with you.
Okay, you are going to depress us again. And you want us to look into bank hacking. Oh my goodness. And paying monies into someone's account that you did not intend to pay.
Correct.
Let's clarify all of that, please. When you say bank hacking, what do you mean?
So in a situation wherein your account gets hacked, okay, or your emails get hacked,
yes,
and there is a
OTP,
you see those stuff like that, wherein you're requested to say on an account that you know exists, on a request that you know you put in, whatever the case may be, and then you get an email that says, listen, paying Ntabiseng X amount into this account, and then you just proceed to pay without confirming and calling Ntabiseng to make sure that Ntabiseng is the one that sent you that email that says you should have paid in this particular account. So now the question is, who's at fault in this situation? Is it one, Ntabiseng, who you assume because you already had an existing relationship with her in terms of this financial instruction that you would have given her, or a contract that existed between the two of you, whatever the case may be? Or is it you who failed to do your due diligence to make sure that the money goes where it's supposed to go?
Ntabiseng, let me give you an example. I know this offhand because it happened to somebody very close to me. So the phone call rings from... the person says they are your service provider. Here's the problem. Mm-hmm. Because everything has become digital, whether you're using an iPad or whether you're using, let's say, your phone, your banking apps, everything is on your devices, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is intertwined. So this individual called to say, I am calling from your telephone service provider. In other words, from MTN, Telkom or Vodacom type of thing.
Yes.
And I am here to tell you that there is activity on your banking app, right? Mm. And we can tell from the service provider's point of view that someone is busy fidgeting in your banking app.
Mm-hmm.
And this person listened very tentatively to this individual who sounded like an official. And the official says, okay, so... we want to deactivate what we seem to believe to be a hacking happening right now, mm-hmm, so that we can disable this person from doing that. What we are going to send you is an OT pin. Read it back to me. And that's exactly what happened. It kept going and kept going. I think it was almost at the last minute when I then said to this person, stop that call.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is that, you know, people can be trusting. This is someone who posed as a service provider. This is someone who, why would you not? They didn't ask you for an ID number. They didn't ask you for any other digits or anything like that. They are saying they're helping you. How do people know? How do people know who to trust and who not to trust?
So this stems from this particular case that was decided earlier on this month.
Mm.
Wherein this poor lady was more or less in the situation that you just explained.
Yes.
She had a contract with one of the big, well, she was going to have a contract with one of the big firms, law firms, ENS,
yes,
wherein she was going to transfer money, I think, to the amount of 5.9 million. And 3 months before she got the account number, she had been in contact with the company, and there had been agreements that this is how it was a transfer of property. This is how it was going to happen. This is the amount that's going to be transferred into the transfer account, etc.
Hang on. Let's follow on. Tabise. So she was going to be paying into that account, or they were going to be paying her. Okay, got you.
She was going to be paying into the trust account, ENS.
Okay.
So So the discussions and the transfer of the signing of the OTP was done, offer to purchase, and all of that was done. What was left now was that payment should be made into the trust account.
Got you.
Yes. So now, 3 months later, she gets an email that's purporting to be from Kevin Nathan Sonnenberg's. Yes. Now, in the email, she gets it while she's at her bank with her bank manager. And then the bank manager says, okay, if the email is saying pay into X amount and it is on the letterhead of ENS, then I suppose it's okay.
Yo.
And then over and above that, two of the employees were present with her before she could press
send
or pay, right? And then she did not ask, unfortunately, to say, listen, I just got an email from whoever in the company, and then this is the bank details. Just confirm with me if these are the correct ones, or when I press pay, everything is fine. She did not do that. So once the email came in, and after she said her goodbye to the employees of ENS, she then pressed send. And then the money, when she did that, it rerouted and went to the scammer's account.
How does that happen?
They had hacked her account.
So someone who hacked must have been someone in the bank.
We're not sure, because she did not open a criminal case against anybody. She was saying in her papers that were in the High Court first, that ended up in the SCA, and the SCA overturned the High Court decision. She was saying in her papers that ENS is at fault. They should have put better firewalls so that people don't hack their system, so that they can be able to send out emails such as the one that she received. And then in the High Court, the court actually agreed with her and said, yes, ENS should have put in better firewalls. But in the SCA, where it's now at, the SCA is like, no. You are the one who bears the responsibility to make sure that the money goes where it's supposed to be destined. And in her particular case, such as your friend's matter, where you eventually stopped it, she was doing everything without having verified with her bank that this, or the service provider rather, that this is truly what is happening and all of those things. So SCA has said that you were in the bank with these people, you did not ask. Your banker was there with you. You could have asked your banker, or your banker
to check the bank account.
Correct, to see if it is the correct one that belongs to this particular institution. Therefore, it is not the fault of this particular institution that you unfortunately got hacked and scammed, and then the money didn't go where it was supposed to go.
Okay. In your legal opinion, who's right here?
Well, from where I stand, we as service providers, we need to ensure that whenever we are sending you emails, whenever we are sending you proof of accounts and all of that, you should know how it is that we work. You should know that if I am going to change my banking details, I will not tell you on the day before I want you to pay my invoice. You would know by virtue of an email well in advance that unfortunately account X is going to be closed. You can now pay into account Y. And in that email, I will also include, please call our offices on the numbers that you know exist, and then confirm if the email is true or not. That is what we have been taught and advised now, in terms of all this AI that is happening and the scamming that is happening. That's what we are told as service providers to do.
There's I don't even know what they call it, but you can, and I wonder if this is not one of the ways in which people can check. There are accounts that are registered as official bank accounts of entity X, for instance. If you are paying a big entity, they are already on the bank system. So
the public platform.
Absolutely. So even if you got the account number wrong, that bank, when you make that payment, your own bank would tell you, no, that does not belong to to that entity. The entity is, let's say, Kaya959.com or whatever, or Kaya FM, whatever the case may be. But they will clearly note that when you pay, this is how we are registered at the bank.
Correct. So those are the ones that are so big that everybody pays into those things.
Yes, like SARS and stuff like that.
One understand.
Yeah.
So, but then now you're dealing with other companies that are not that public.
Mm.
So that's why we are urged to make sure that our clients have a clear line of communication in terms of banking and payments and invoices and all of those things. And once we have done our part in that particular aspect, the onus now rests on the recipient, who is going to be now departing, or rather depositing money into our accounts. That, listen, are you sure that this is the account that you're supposed to be paying into? Did you call and speak to somebody in that particular institution to say, I got this email address, email, and then it says this account is 1234. Please verify with me before I make payment.
Yep.
And if you do not do that, you cannot hold that institution liable, because they had made it very clear to you how it is you should verify that they are indeed who they say they are and make payments as such.
I want to take a quick break, and when I come back, I'm going to take those calls with questions for you. And Ntabiseng, of course, we are speaking about hacking, banking hacking, but Ntabiseng is very happy to also look at all your other legal matters. You can remain anonymous, it's fine. She doesn't mind at all, except that if you want, you know, Musa, right? Yeah, it's free. Outside of here, it's not so free. So 086-00-00959. You can send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. Thanks so much for staying with us. All matters relating to your legal problems, they are welcome. I promise you, Ntabiseng is going to help as much as possible. 086-00-00959. The WhatsApp note is on 063-688-0959. Zuko is calling from Joburg. Zuko, good evening and welcome. Hi, Zuko.
Yes, how are you doing?
I'm well. Welcome.
Very interesting topic. I'm just driving home. There's a South African business. I'll briefly tell you the story.
Yeah.
So mobile banking starts in 12, 13 years ago. And what we now know is phishing activities, cyber security, where people were hacking. This was before OTPs.
People were hacking.
When you are trying to get into your bank account via your mobile device,
yes,
they would intercept the message.
Yes.
Okay? And then they would clean out your bank account. So this happened to a friend of mine, but these guys were students at Stellenbosch University.
Mm.
Their auntie's bank account was cleaned out, and they said, no, this can't be. The brother worked at Vodacom, because obviously a lot of this works with the telcos. And these guys were computer science students at Stellenbosch. And they said, we're going to try and understand what's going on here. How can Danny's money get taken? Cut a long story short, they work out what the various movements are, what the various permissions are. They sell it to Nedbank, their solution. And they say to Nedbank, overnight, we will reduce your fraud with this type of activity to zero. Nedbank fly down to Cape Town.
Mm.
They go and check out these students who are operating out of a garage.
Mm. Wow.
And
Zuko.
I mean, you guys are a bunch of students.
Yes.
So I'll cut to the point. But so 12 years later, Nedbank takes the service.
Yeah.
They then phone Standard Bank and they say, the fraud we've just stopped at Nedbank is coming your way. They phone FNB, they phone APSA, they phone Capitec, and all the other banks.
Mm.
The very next day, all these other banks, the very next week, say, we want the same service. That company is called Intersect.
Oh, I see.
We are now in 14 countries.
Hello.
We employ 300 staff around the world. We have just moved the entire management team to the U.S.
Wow.
In Atlanta. Okay, and when you bank on your mobile phone, and it asks you for what we call 3D secure,
yes,
you will know that if you're buying anything online, it will route you to your bank account or to your app, which then is the proxy for your bank account. That is our software. We are now in 2,000 banks. Mm. We're now in 2,000 banks around the world, and MasterCard is our partner. So MasterCard have got 60,000 clients around the world, and they've got 60,000 banks as their clients. We're busy rolling out our service with MasterCard to 1,000 banks as we speak around the world.
Wow. Okay,
South African business.
Wow.
Okay, so I understand exactly what type of thing talking about. But
yeah.
The point I'm at, and she's very right, it's complex, it's legal, etc. Okay, we, besides FNB, all the banks in South Africa run through our software. And internationally, as I said, we've got more than 2,000 banks as our clients. But where I think you can take this discussion is that one of our South African black individuals grew up in the Eastern Cape, now sits in Atlanta, and he's heading up one of our divisions globally. His name is Mizu, and it would be very fascinating to speak to him because he's actually an IT technical guy and could give the technical aspect of what we do as the company. It's called Intersect. You can Google it.
Mm.
I can send you the latest news. We bought out Nedbank 2 weeks ago as our fund, which is called PayFund.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very interesting topic. But there's an interesting add-on here for your show where we dial Mzu, who sits in Atlanta. He's been there about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he now is an executive in this global business that is preventing fraud on online banking.
You've just made my day. I know we're speaking about a miserable discussion, but boy, what a fantastic story, Zuko. What a fantastic story. Well done. Well done.
So we process or authenticate, whatever the word one wants to use, over a billion transactions a month. Over a billion transactions. You can understand the complexity of our service is that the criteria for merchants to be able to transact, i.e. send the message to a bank account to say release the money.
Yes.
If the security is too tight, there will be some normal payments that won't pass.
Oh, I see.
So that will be a loss. That will be lost revenue.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
But if the security is too low, then fraud obviously is up.
Creeps up.
And so the balance is how do you have enough security so that you don't have a false negative and you don't block potentially obviously the positive transactions that it should go through, because banks don't want to lose the transaction because they're obviously making transaction fees, but at the same time they don't want to go through they don't want fraudulent transactions to go through. We're at the cutting edge of that's why our business is called Intersect, because we operate at the intersection of you trying to use your mobile device to interact or get into your bank account. And at that intersection, that is where fraud is prevalent. And we operate in that intersection within the bank system. And obviously, our software is inserted into the bank system to prevent the fraud and also to allow for the positive transactions to happen. So happy to take this offline and connect you with the guys.
Well, it's fantastic news. Well, thank you so much for calling. Isn't that amazing? Tabi saying that's fantastic. Thanks, Zuko. Really appreciate you calling through. Thank you.
That is amazing. And I think that is why the emphasis on this particular matter wasn't on the banking app itself, but on the individual to say you didn't check that the account was the one that you were supposed to pay into. Because all the things that he's mentioned, like you said, it's all technical, but we do know that if you're going to pay on an online whatnot, it reroutes you to your banking app. We know all of those things happen. So the fault in this particular matter was on the individual who didn't check that the account was the correct one. That is that was very amazing.
Wow. Manitsema, you're in Springs. Good evening and welcome.
Hi, Asimela, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine. Hi, I think everything. I just want to ask something quickly. I think I've been procrastinating to ask this question. My cousin, when he was 18, he was falsely accused by a girlfriend.
He was what?
Falsely accused by a girlfriend.
Oh, so your cousin is a guy.
Yeah, my cousin is a guy. Mm-hmm. So he waited a trial, and then the girlfriend confessed that she lied. But obviously, it gets tainted and everything. So Nagapuma, he was this discouraged teenager, young adult, keep on doing small nanyana, arm robberies or whatever. Not arm robberies, they want to join the stupid community, bambot. So for 18 years, for all those crimes, he would be waiting trial, like close to 20 years. But 3 years back, they convicted him of a crime that they allegedly say he did on 2020, the we arm robbery, it has been. So now I wanted to ask Buti, did they have a right now, would he not consider the awaiting trials of 20 years and then they just bump away another 15 years on top of all the awaiting trials of saying case postponed. But now with this not having much evidence and then they just bump away or they baba kathele wuye with this awaiting trials and everything. I just wanted to find out, was he supposed to appeal that or what was he supposed to do, because he did not have a lawyer. They were using a state lawyer. So that state lawyer, I think, is not interested to appeal the case. Mm. What is he supposed to do?
Ntabise?
Okay. If I may just try and understand. For 20 years, he had pending matters wherein he wasn't sentenced.
Yes, he wasn't.
Okay.
But 3 years back, there's a matter that arose within COVID. He did an armed robbery, a target. But he didn't have a gun. So, but with that case, he was convicted. It did not even stay a cooler court. I think, I don't know, maybe it's because my mama is in law, but now my cry is that, I do visit him, you know, my cry is that, could they have not considered the other years that he's been waging trial, I say more that, but now, if I am convicted, it's a wee orange wearer, like I say,
In the blue on the white ones. Okay.
Yes.
So are you saying that while he was awaiting trial, he was in custody for all these other matters? He didn't get bail?
No, he did get bail and then he goes back. He gets bail and then he goes back. So
he gets bail and he goes back for another crime?
Yeah, he goes out and then
he
goes back, because now I need discouragement, like now it's like a young people, but goes back again. So, but now my question is that all those years that he's been maybe in jail, then Abuye food, could have they not considered those years, then would be 15 years, 20 years?
No, because remember all those other matters are not yet finalized. Only when we are at a stage wherein, if he's convicted and found guilty for all those other pending matters, will we then mitigate and say, in this particular matter, he's been in custody from date X to date Y, and therefore would request that the court consider the factor that he has been in custody from date X to date Y for this particular crime, and then reduce whatever sentence that you were going to give by those many years that he's in there. So if a COVID that came through right now, he was detained for it, let's say, for argument's sake, he was detained from 2020 in October, and then he was sentenced in 2021 in July, then they can argue for those months that relate to that particular crime. The court cannot look at the months or the years that he spent in custody for other crimes that he's yet to be convicted. So what he needs to do is that he must request his legal aid attorney to make, if the pending matters are being postponed for frivolous or silly things, the attorney must make an application in terms of Section 342A, capital letter A of the Criminal Procedure Act, right? So which means that if the state is proceeding with postponing this matter without any investigations being fruitful, then the attorney makes an application in terms of Section 342A, which is basically saying the state is wasting the court's time and also hindering on his rights, then the matter must be struck off the roll and it can be reinstated once the state has its house in order. So now that duty relies on the attorney to make sure that they make that application.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks, Malitzima. Thank you. Tabiseng, I can't tell you, we've run out of time.
Already?
We actually have. Yes, we've run out of time. Looking forward to seeing you in person next week.
Next week, I'll be there.
And just maybe before you go, quickly, Tabiseng, your details, please.
Our landline is 087-265-8010. Our WhatsApp line, 079-654-7523. Our email is info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za. And we are found in Randburg at 272 Oak Avenue on the ground floor, suite G9. Yes.
Appreciate it. See you next week.
See you next week.
That's Ntabi Singh Dubazana. And that's it for us, guys. We'll be back tomorrow at 8. Thanks.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.